Jay Mariotti here, and they say Daryl Morey is a basketball savant, blessed with an analytical mind like few others in sports. Sorry, but I think Morey is an idiot because nobody with a scintilla of brain power posts a tweet supporting protesters in Hong Kong, especially when the Houston Rockets, the team he runs, are among the most popular NBA franchises in China. Predictably, China's official basketball association has suspended all cooperation with the Rockets, citing Morey's, quote, improper remarks regarding Hong Kong, unquote. And you wonder what Yao Ming, China's greatest basketball export, now thinks about the Rockets, his former team. Enough of the activism, okay? You are a general manager, Daryl, not a world changer. You are a coach, Greg Popovich, not a Trump destroyer. With an apocalyptic presidential election ahead next year, it's time for a moratorium on sports people who use their sports platforms to take political positions. As Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta said urgently while Morey was quickly deleting his tweet, and I'm quoting, "We're here to play basketball, not to offend anybody," unquote. I only can wonder about the madness that awaits Morey, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook this week when they play a preseason game in Asia, and for that matter, when LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the Lakers join the Nets in China for exhibitions. All of this consternation thanks to one Daryl Morey. Or is it Daryl Moron?
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti, the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again. Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true.
Fuck you!
He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
Evidence of all sorts is trickling in, and I conclude that the Dodgers still are eminently capable of breaking the hearts of their fans once again. Unlike baseball's better two super teams, the Astros and Yankees, the Dodgers have shown more vulnerability this postseason, namely the usual October struggles of Clayton Kershaw, who perpetuates a disparity unlike any great pitcher probably in baseball history. All-time dominance in the regular season, and then tragic inconsistency in the postseason. But while they overcame his Game 2 loss to win Game 3 with a barrage started by Max Muncy, who was almost impossible to get out these days, and continued by Justin Turner and old-timer Russell Martin, keep in mind that this outburst was against a Washington staff trying to get by with three excellent starters and no bullpen to speak of. The Dodgers could afford to wait out the Nationals even when manager Dave Martinez brought in Patrick Corbin out of the bullpen, and that did not work out, did it? The way it did when Max Scherzer relieved the unhittable Steven Strasburg in Game 2. Corbin allowed six earned runs in two-thirds of an inning. Look, you can't keep using starters as relievers without a real bullpen and get away with it in October. Yet, amid such uncertainty, including how presumptive MVP Cody Bellinger and Cody Seager continue their struggles in the postseason and why Joe Kelly is even pitching meaningful innings, I don't see the Dodgers beating the Astros or the Yankees, maybe not the Braves. And I haven't even brought up closer Kenley Jansen, who could be a hero or an arsonist. As somebody who has covered some of baseball's greatest dramas, Kirk Gibson's home run, Bill Buckner letting the ball slip through the wickets, the Yankees trying to win for New York after 9/11, the Red Sox finally breaking through, Steve Bartman sabotaging the Cubs, yes, I would dive headfirst into an Astros-Yankees showdown in the American League Championship Series. These clearly are the sport's best two teams, and the series would feature a collision of extreme strengths. The Yankees' robust attack, so deep and relentless. Savages in the box against the Twins. Against the Astros' all-time rotation, which includes Justin Verlander, that gem the other night. Gerrit Cole's 15 strikeouts the other night, only two short of Bob Gibson's postseason record, as the Astros took command over Tampa Bay. Thing is, the Astros' bats are mammoth as well, starting with Alex Bregman on down through Jose Altuve, George Springer, Yordan Alvarez, and the rest. And that balance, and having home advantage in a Game 7, is why Houston remains favored to reach the World Series and then win it. You saw the disparity between a superpower and an overachiever when the Minnesota Twins, short on starting pitching despite winning 101 games with their monster lineup, had to start a pitcher, Randy Dobnak, who only 6 months ago, get this, was pitching for the Class A Fort Myers Miracle while moonlighting as an Uber driver. At least his driver rating was 4.99. You know what's coming here. That's much better than the ERA with which he left Yankee Stadium after allowing four earned runs in two innings. I'm not making fun of him. I'm making fun of the Twins. Why is he pitching in a divisional series? Naturally, Yankees fans chanted Uber at him. It serves the Twins right for not spending more on pitching. So think about this. Who doesn't want to see Judge, Stanton, LeMahieu, Torres, Sanchez, Gregorius, etc. against Verlander, Cole, and Zach Greinke? Epic is the word, but the Astros continue to be a team with few weaknesses, and the Yankees win that series only if closer Roberto Osuna implodes. Second-guessing is a pastime in baseball-obsessed towns like St. Louis, and if the Cardinals do lose their National League Divisional Series, their manager, Mike Schilt, will be feeling the pressure cooker just as deposed predecessor Mike Matheny did. Schilt is hearing so much static, and rightfully so, after his decision to intentionally walk veteran Brian McCann to get to young Dansby Swanson with two out in the ninth, leading 1-0 in Game 3. You know what happened. The result turned around the divisional series with Swanson doubling off Carlos Martinez to tie the game at 1, then scoring when Cardinals killer Adam Duvall doubled to put the Braves up in the series. Here was Schilt trying to explain and claiming Martinez made the call for him. No, you're the manager.
So, obviously, we got a guy third, tie and run. Guys looked over, you know, and want to have a discussion about McCann with Swanson on deck. Went out. Consensus was that, you know, rather take a shot at Swanson. 0-for-6 at that point with Carlos. You know, clearly that's the go-ahead run you're putting on. But you have two outs, and we play to win. Going to play to win the game, you know. Everybody felt like that was the best matchup, including the guy on the mound. Took her shot, didn't make a pitch, made him pay.
This has been the most entertaining of the four series from a baseball perspective. And with the Dodgers still battling the Nationals, maybe my prediction will come true. Atlanta goes to the World Series despite a bullpen that sometimes would make an ice cube sweat. As Major League teams speak freely about fiscal restraint this offseason, you should enjoy this postseason baseball while you still have it. Labor tension is almost certain to escalate into a shutdown of the sport in 2021, as we see the big revenue Red Sox, speaking of avoiding the competitive balance tax and maybe trading their popular superstar, don't do it, Mookie Betts. Even the Astros, who could have a dynasty in their sights, are lukewarm about trying to re-sign Gerrit Cole. He just struck out 15. Oh, we might not re-sign him. Well, you've got the money. And speaking of the labor impasse and owners who prioritize profits over the civic responsibility of winning, I have no reason to doubt former Miami Marlins president David Sampson, who said he was advised by one of the biggest frauds in American sports, That would be White Sox and Bulls owner Jerry Reinsdorf to finish in second place every year. I don't need to underline how insidious that would be, urging a supposed rival that he should more or less tank the way you're more or less tanking. And certainly the Marlins, White Sox, and Bulls all have tanked. This was Samson ratting out the rat Reinsdorf on an ESPN podcast.
You know, Jerry Reinsdorf, when I first got into baseball, I've never told this story before, and I like Jerry very much, and I'm sorry, Jerry, but here it comes. He sat me down. I was 32 years old, just in baseball for my first of 18 years, and he said, you know what? Here's my best advice to you. Finish in second place every single year. Because your fans will say, wow, we've got a shot. We're in it. But there's always the carrot left. There's always one more step to take. And I actually, to my detriment, listened to him and stayed in sort of bogged down in mediocrity. 1 year we won the World Series. 1 year we lost 100 million. 100 million. Both 100 games and 100 million.
You know why I believe Samson? Because Reinsdorf once said on Chicago radio that it was okay to finish in the top four of a sport so it keeps the fans coming back for more. Why do you think this loser is in these perpetual rebuilds in a major market with the White Sox and the Bulls? Always rebuilding. The White Sox have not made the playoffs in 11 years. The Bulls, except for a brief blip with Derrick Rose before he got hurt, haven't done diddly since Reinsdorf prematurely broke up the Michael Jordan dynasty. Reinsdorf has owned the White Sox since 1981 and the Bulls since 85. Removing the six NBA titles of Jordan, whom Reinsdorf inherited, Jerry has won exactly one championship, that fluke of sorts with the 2005 White Sox, and that's it. That means without Jordan, Reinsdorf is 1-66 and counting, with neither of his teams anywhere close to contending for the foreseeable future. The man is 83 years old. He's a sad, senile sham. At least Chicago has the Cubs, who had their one rebuild and won't be doing another. To that end, boss Theo Epstein would be wise to hire a manager who has been in the trenches and will kick some clubhouse ass when Joe Maddon did not. That man would be Joe Girardi, the former Cubs and Illinois hero, who has the experience that David Ross does not have. Don't be a copycat, Theo, and do the Aaron Boone, Alex Cora thing from ESPN to the dugout. Ross is not Boone, Ross is not Cora, and neither is Maddon, who will be interviewing with the Angels this week for what should be a no-brainer for both parties, unless, of course, the Dodgers were to lose this series and want a new manager. Imagine Hollywood Joe Maddon. Think of the possibilities. To the NFL, where another week brings another violent and unnecessary hit that begs the continuing question, are the players safe? And why is the NFL so inconsistent in its enforcement of penalties, a common problem in general in the Roger Goodell era? Vontaze Burfict was ejected and banned for the season, deservedly so, yet on Sunday, Baltimore's Earl Thomas received only a 15-yard penalty for his vicious hit to the chin of Steelers backup quarterback Mason Rudolph, who lay on the ground motionless as teammate Juju Smith-Schuster was overcome by emotion, and another teammate Alejandro Villanueva frantically waved for medical help. Why wasn't Thomas ejected? And why did the medical cart fail in Pittsburgh, forcing Rudolph to walk off with the help of teammates? It failed because of operator error, whatever that means, as the NFL investigates. If the league is serious about making the game safe, we should not keep asking these questions, and it's fortunate Rudolph is said to be okay after returning home from the hospital. But nobody needs to be reminded that Pittsburgh is where Ryan Shazier was paralyzed in a career-ending football horror. For his part, Thomas claims he meant no harm, of course.
Yeah, I didn't think much of it. Once I was just getting to the ball, trying to, you know, make a play for my team. I hit the strike zone like we talked about. I didn't go high. I didn't try to intentionally hurt him. I'm worried about him. I heard he's at the hospital. My prayers go out to him and his family. But I'm never trying to hurt anybody. At the end of the day, guys have families. So I never try to intentionally hurt him. I was just going and flying to the ball like I normally do. And I was asking the ref what happened. And they said upstairs, said a part of my helmet kind of hit him in the chin. And that's what caused the flag. But I still believe that it wasn't intentional on my part.
The Steelers keep living a nightmare, having lost Ben Roethlisberger for the year. And if Rudolph misses time, their starting quarterback is somebody named Devlin Hodges. The Ravens took advantage by winning in overtime thanks to a Smith-Schuster fumble, but Baltimore should not feel good about the way it won the game. And it's a stunning sight, Patrick Mahomes limping around on one leg, scrambling for his life, reduced to a shell of his MVP self in a home loss to the Colts. Were the Kansas City fans actually booing? Look, come on. Mahomes is human, and he's banged up with a bad left ankle, and his battered line is not protecting him. It's only week five, and the Colts, despite their own injuries, had the defensive line and the schemes to slow down Superman. And the Colts also had Justin Houston, who exacted revenge on the Chiefs following his offseason release by making a huge tackle on fourth and one that finished off his former team. If anything, I'd wonder why the Chiefs' defense allowed 120 yards plus on the ground to Marlon Mack as the Colts went old school and pounding the ball on the ground and controlling the clock. I would not assume this as anything but a wake-up call for the Chiefs, who now are one game behind the 5-0 Patriots for AFC home field advantage. Remember, in each of their previous 25 games, the Chiefs scored at least 25 points, by far the longest streak in NFL history. Mahomes is allowed a blip, okay? And whoa there on the Cowboys super hype, and turn up that heat under Jason Garrett's ass, because typically Dallas laid a stinker in midseason and reminded us why it never will return to a Super Bowl as long as Jerry Jones owns that team, and certainly won't be going to a Super Bowl with Garrett as the coach. Green Bay's defense spooked Dak Prescott into picks and sacks, unbefitting of a man who wants to be the highest paid quarterback ever, right? Zeke Elliott isn't getting enough carries for his mega contract. And Aaron Rodgers, who has earned his fat contract, isn't the only Aaron in Green Bay. Aaron Jones, the running back, scored 4 touchdowns and rushed for 107 yards and shredding up that Cowboys defense. The Packers, now 4-1, take over the NFC North lead. And Matt LaFleur, the rookie head coach, is doing a better coaching job than his former boss, Sean McVay, is doing with the LA Rams. So why does Rodgers keep yelling at LaFleur on the sideline? Does Aaron think he's the head coach? Aaron, just shut up. You're 4-1. Be happy. At some point, Goodell and the owners will have to weigh their overambitious dreams about London against the logistical realities of a 16-game NFL regular season. Credit the Raiders for having the better travel plan and more resilience than the Bears, whose acclaimed defense was sluggish and shredded up much of the night, including on a 97-yard game-winning drive at Tottenham Stadium. And among the shredded, Khalil Mack! No! The brute force defender traded away by John Gruden, who was double and triple teamed throughout the game to virtual silence thanks to a great game plan by the Raiders. Yep, they overcame numerous obstacles in a fierce Chicago comeback, but Gruden earned his $10 million for a gutsy fake punt on 4th-and-1 deep in his own territory, then watching Derek Carr and Josh Jacobs. Yes, the Josh Jacobs drafted with one of the Mac trade draft picks chew up the Bears, and they're sure to be embattled defensive coordinator Chuck Pagano. Chase Daniel threw a game-ending pick, and suddenly the arrogance of Coach Matt Nagy is reduced to the reality that Chicago is not a contender with this lame offense, with or without injured Mitchell Trubisky. Here was Gruden in rare form, even for him, as he spoke to his 3-2 team, 3-2, after the victory in Europe.
Have a disc disco in here. I don't have a disco. Well, let's all start dancing. Yeah. Say this, man. I'm 56 years old. That's the most fun I've ever had tonight, man. I am so proud of you. You have no idea. I mean, we've been through a roller coaster already, but what you proved today is one thing. You can beat anybody, anywhere, on any time zone. You got it. We're going to have a great flight home. We have some injuries. I want everybody to have a great bye week. You have a whole week off.
Don't strut too much, old man Chucky. Resident lunatic Richie Incognito cost you a field goal by shoving Buster Screen's head into the turf. And after cheap shot fiend Perfect was suspended for the season and problem child Antonio Brown was shipped out of Oakland, Gruden is about to go 0-for-3 on bad ideas. Why is Incognito on that team? Not to make excuses for the Bears who were not ready to play and were physically thumped by the Raiders, but they had to determine whether to leave for London early in the week after playing in the late Sunday game or wait to leave until Thursday afternoon. These are decisions NFL teams should not have to deal with in midseason. The Bears decided many weeks ago over the summer that they would not arrive until Friday, and that was a logistical mistake as they looked sluggish in the first half, while the Raiders, who left 3 days earlier, were the fresher team. Better prepared, too. Yes, the Bears screwed up logistically and on the field. That said, it's not fair that any team's postseason chances might come down to a proper travel itinerary to London Town. Let this be a loud statement to Goodell and the owners. Putting a franchise full-time in London never would work. Even if these games sell out over there in hours with tickets bought up by expats and curious Euros, nothing is ever going to change the 5-hour time difference from the East Coast to London and 8 hours from the West Coast, meaning the London team always would have a lopsided advantage in energy in those home games. And what about the short turnaround for a playoff game if the London team made the playoffs? And would free agents really want to sign in London when they grew up in the United States? They want to go play in London? No. It's crazy. And it's not right to sell globalization at the expense of players and teams. And if these games cannot be played in the preseason, and remember the league says it will dump the preseason entirely if the players go for a 17-game regular season, then it's time to bag this London calling thing for good. And if the league continues to push for 4 games a year in London with others sprinkled in, maybe in Germany and Mexico, then the Players Association should add it to a very long, contentious agenda as collective bargaining talks continue. And if the Patriots are going 16-0 and returning to the Super Bowl, which likely would require beating Kansas City twice, they will need a dominant offense to match what might be Bill Belichick's best defense of his New England career. A well-behaved Antonio Brown would have been enough to beat the Chiefs in December, then in the AFC Championship game, but Brown is a clown, so Tom Brady is trying to make good with effective quick strikes to Julian Edelman, Josh Gordon, and Brandon Bolden, while Sony Michel and James White are efficient in the backfield. The Sundays are easy when they're playing the Redskins, Jets, and Dolphins. They've had a very easy schedule. But now, how does New England overcome Patrick Mahomes when they play later in the regular season? And then a few weeks later, I would assume, in the AFC title game. As for the Redskins, it's no coincidence that 2-year-old videos have surfaced containing images of the embattled Redskins coach Jay Gruden partying like a kid and smoking something while sitting close to a very young woman, college age, apparently, on a sidewalk near drinking establishments somewhere. Gruden has yet to deny that he is in the photos, and he has been married to his wife for 29 years, but the point is this. Would the devious Redskins owner, Daniel Snyder, leak the videos as a way of firing Gruden with cause, which would allow the team to save the balance of his salary? I wouldn't put anything past Snyder. This is life in 2019 in the corporate world. Yeah, you have some ammunition. Get it out there. Sick world, right? Gruden has made it clear he didn't want Dwayne Haskins in the draft, and when Snyder and Bruce Allen moved forward and took Haskins anyway, it effectively ended Gruden's influence there. He is better off without the Redskins, and any coach thinking of working there should ponder sewage removal work as a smarter option. Here was the younger Gruden, soon to be working for his brother John.
Every loss this season brings more and more questions about your job security. Has anybody in the organization told you anything about your job and what's your concern about hanging on to this job?
Nobody's told me anything, and I don't have a concern. I'll just wait and see. My key work's on Monday. Keep working. Go attack the Miami Dolphins and plan on getting our first win next week.
As long as Snyder is the owner, the Redskins are in a dark place in football life. The Patriots, by the way, had many more fans in the stands in Maryland, something Bill Belichick was excited about. Yes, some things actually do excite Belichick. And how would you like to be Kirk Cousins, knowing your receivers are about to stage a mutiny if you don't start earning your monster contract? Stephon Diggs walked out and was fined $200,000. Adam Thielen called out Cousins publicly, but nothing cures an offensive feud like a bad opposing defense, and Cousins did thrive against the Giants, finding Thielen early and often, if continuing to use Diggs as a secondary weapon while Dalvin Cook keeps dominating on the ground. Diggs now says he wants to stay in Minnesota, oh, as if nothing happened. That's what a $200,000 fine will do to your attitude.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of football, especially at this point. You want to have success and you want to win. And we had an unbelievable win today, especially trying to dominate. Kirk played lights out. Our old line, you know, they did their best to play clean, and we were moving the ball. So as far as, like, having individual success is part of, like, the team success. So do your part.
Do you want to be in Minnesota?
Yeah, I want to be in Minnesota.
Diggs, Jalen Ramsey, and other NFL stars are finding out that the NFL is not the NBA. You can't just demand a trade and expect it to happen. Keep signing those fine checks, Stephon, and catch the ball when it comes your way. As predicted, the Vikings defense quieted Daniel Jones' mania as the rookie struggled to avoid the Minnesota pass rush. And in about 3 weeks, they'll be asking for Eli Manning on the talk shows. I am very impressed by the Saints, who continue to march on as the NFC's best team without Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater had his high water mark with 4 touchdown passes, taking apart the Buccaneers with effective strikes to Michael Thomas, Ted Ginn, and Josh Hill that neutralized the pass rush of Shaq Barrett. While the Saints defense is making that team a complete operation as it awaits the return of Brees, here's Bridgewater loving life.
It should have been 5 touchdowns. But that was a great overall team effort. I feel like I have the easy job. You know, all I have to do is throw the ball to Mike Thomas, Jared Cook, Ted Ginn, Austin Carr, Alvin Kamara, Josh Hill, Taysom Hill. Just find a way to get those guys the ball, and they'll make plays for us. And today was one of those days. Everything was clicking. We knew coming into this game that we were going to have a lot of opportunities to, you know, score points and get down the red zone and do some good things.
Sean Payton, you are the coach of the year. We're only 5 weeks in. He's the coach of the year. And Melvin Gordon's comeback had a negative effect on the L.A. Chargers, who were flat and uninspired. Even Phillip Rivers, who has been looking his age in losing to previously winless Denver. Yuck. Chargers are impressing nobody here in L.A. as they move as civic orphans to the Rams' new Taj Mahal Stadium in Inglewood next year. Anybody going to those games? Nobody's going to the games now. Why would they then? The Falcons were in the Super Bowl not that long ago, but porous defense is killing this team, and the door is closing hard on head coach Dan Quinn, who will be fired sooner than later as Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are being wasted. Owner Arthur Blank says he's disappointed. That means Blank, as we speak, is looking for one of these Matt LaFleur types, one of these Sean McVay guys, to have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones turn loose with. It doesn't matter if you don't have a defense. The Texans will be in the AFC South race all season as long as Deshaun Watson remains upright, and the embattled offensive line protected Watson against the meek Atlanta pass rush, allowing him to perform his magic with Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins, and Darren Fells to the tune of ready. 53 points, 426 yards, 5 touchdowns, and a perfect passer rating. This guy, Watson, is a top 5 MVP candidate right now. Everybody talking about Mahomes, of course, and everybody talking about Russell Wilson. What about Deshaun? He doesn't have anybody protecting him, and he's still working this magic. However, he's got this up-and-down team, and it kills him when we talk about him nationally. Sad. And is this finally the emergence of Kyler Murray? I know he was playing the Bengals, but he was effective and mistake-free throwing the ball, and he also rushed, it's about time, for 93 yards, giving Murray and Cliff Kingsbury their first NFL victory together. With a kick-ass defense and just enough Josh Allen not to get you beat, the Bills are a shocking 4-1 and looking like an AFC wildcard team, sacking Marcus Mariota. I'm getting tired of him. 5 times in Nashville as the Cairo Santos field goal experience flopped. He missed 4 kicks for the Titans. Bye-bye. Christian McCaffrey won the battle of the NFL's 2 most intriguing breakout players, quieting the legend of Gardner Minshew with 237 total yards and 3 touchdowns in a shootout win over Jacksonville. The Jags could have used Jalen Ramsey, but he has flat out quit on them after his trade demand, while Minshew came back to earth by losing 3 fumbles, one that was recovered and returned 56 yards for a score. Kyle Allen, by the way, became the first undrafted quarterback to win his first 4 NFL games since Kurt Warner, the Hall of Famer, which means the Cam Newton era is over in Charlotte. And might we have even more contenders for O in 16 seasons? Without mono-stricken Sam Darnold, the miserable no-offense Jets allowed 10 sacks on Sunday and might join the Dolphins, Redskins, and Bengals in that hunt for infamy. Oh, wait a minute. The Dolphins play the Redskins next week. How about a 0-0 tie? Or how about letting everybody in for free? On to college football, where Florida's bullish victory over Auburn means the Gators become the most significant team in the sport at the moment. By that, I'm not saying they're going to win the college football playoff or even go to the college football playoff. They aren't, with quarterback Kyle Trask dealing with a light MCL sprain. If an MCL sprain ever could be light, after starter Felipe Franks was lost for the season after ankle surgery. But say this for Coach Dan Mullen, his team is in the thick of determining which teams do go to the 4-team playoff, and that journey starts Saturday night, Death Valley, when the Gators visit Baton Rouge for a showdown against number 5 LSU, and Joe Burrow, a passing machine who threw 5 more TD passes and is squarely in the hunt for the Heisman. LSU's offense against Florida's defense, fun on a Saturday night. That's worth watching. 3 weeks later, the Gators play number 3 Georgia, with the winner likely headed to the SEC title game against the winner of LSU at Alabama in early November, assuming LSU survives Auburn in its previous game. I've got this all mapped out already. Here is Mullen gushing about the crowd in the swamp in this ESPN interview.
This is what the swamp's going to be like in the future, not the swamp of old. This is the swamp.
All right, one more question. LSU next week, what can you guys take away from a big win like this headed into that one?
That it just makes next week even bigger. Best part about being 6-0, we get a chance to go 7-0 next week.
How do you not love that man's enthusiasm? Mullen finally got some attention nationally on an HBO series last week, and he's now 16-3 in his second season in Gainesville, far better than 3 other high-profile coaches, Willie Taggart, Scott Frost, Chip Kelly, are doing in their sophomore season. And Oklahoma gets its first real test with Jalen Hurts under center, with the Red River rivalry battle against Texas in Dallas. And as Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, and Justin Fields keep putting up Heisman numbers, do not forget Wisconsin workhorse Jonathan Taylor, who is unstoppable with the unbeaten Badgers heading toward an October 26th showdown at Ohio State. I have circled that. Running backs used to win the Heisman routinely, but since the year 2000, they have won only twice. The rest are quarterbacks. Tua and the Crimson Tide have a tough one at Texas A&M, where Coach Jimbo Fisher needs to make a statement to avoid Aggie fans maybe starting to hoot and holler and ask, why is he getting a fully guaranteed $75 million anyway with 8 seasons to go? They will ask. It's College Station. And Notre Dame USC is Clay Helton's last stand as coach as Urban Meyer froths at the mouth, waiting for the USC offer. Ian Book and his Notre Dame receivers will be too much for the Trojans in what once was a great series, not anymore. And all you need to know about Jeremy Pruitt and his impending dismissal as Tennessee's coach is the grin on the face of the police officer who arrested linebacker Jeremy Banks. As captured on video, the officer was on the phone in Knoxville with the embattled Pruitt explaining the arrest of Banks, who was jailed for an outstanding warrant and was shown cursing at police. Another video surfaced of an August 24th incident in which Banks told a woman he would quote-unquote smack her if she refused to let him into a party. So Banks has been kicked off the team, as he should have been, but Pruitt still is in hot water for this comment he made to the police on that audio.
So why do you have to arrest him just because he's got a warrant?
Because the state of Tennessee is the one who issued the warrant, so I have to take him in for that warrant. I have no choice about that. If it was just a suspended license, I can have discretion on that. But since there's a warrant out for his arrest, I have no discretion on that itself.
Does it say when the warrant was issued?
No, sir. It just says that there's a warrant for his arrest.
This is the silliest shit I've ever seen in my life. I got it. I understand. I've worked at 4 places. They never had no crap like this except for here. Because the people usually say, hey, something's not right here.
Is Pruitt trying to say that police in Tallahassee, Athens, and Tuscaloosa would have given a coach a heads up in such a situation? Yeah, I think that's what Pruitt was saying. Yep. And what is the difference between those three programs and Tennessee right now? Alabama, Georgia, and Florida State were contending for national titles back then when Pruitt was at those places. Tennessee, after a home loss to Georgia, is 1-4. You don't think that grinning cop knows all of that? Bill Self has lost his mind, his dignity, and his sense of reality. In dire trouble as it is with the NCAA ready to punish his dirty-as-crud Kansas program for his relationship with pay-for-play Adidas reps, Self and his athletic director Jeff Long went ahead and approved a Friday night show by rapper Snoop Dogg. What could possibly go wrong here, huh? Self knew what he was getting into, promoting Snoop's appearance during late night at Allen Fieldhouse with his own gold money chain and outsized Adidas basketball sweatshirt in a video. We talked about it last week. Sure enough, Snoop trotted out pole dancers, profanity, and a money gun as the kids went nuts at the Fieldhouse. This is known as trolling the NCAA, and in the process, does Self realize that parents are paying money to send their kids to that university? Long quickly apologized while Self claimed he was in the locker room and didn't see the performance. Bill, you set up the performance and then, sure, you went to the locker room. Much as the NCAA doesn't want to punish a blue blood ATM like Kansas, Self's defiance is leaving the authorities with little choice but to throw down the hammer. I thought Lawrence was in the heartland. What happened to Midwestern values?
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
To the NBA, where, yes, LeBron James and Anthony Davis were monsters in their first preseason game together, embarrassing the Warriors in their first game at the gleaming new Chase Center. LeBron says he can be honest with Davis because of their close friendship. That helps.
You know, it's never, I don't think it's ever easy to build, but I think it's been very good because of the relationship that we had before becoming teammates. We're able to be straightforward with one another, not sugarcoat anything, and not take anything personal. Being able to take constructive criticism, he gets in my ear, I get in his ear, but it's all for the better of each other, trying to make each other better and challenge each other, which ultimately be better for the team.
Yet, one game into the preseason, how foolish of the Lakers' social media team to issue this tweet. Quote, consider this a warning, unquote. What? Aren't these multi-billion dollar businesses? You would think Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka would control their tweeters unless, I don't know, maybe Jeannie is the one doing the tweeting. She's had a rough time. Maybe this, maybe, give me that, give me your social media account. I'm going to tweet this. Hey, I've seen it all in sports. And did new Warrior D'Angelo Russell really have to refer to the Lakers as, quote, like a fantasy team, unquote? I'm sure Draymond Green and Steve Kerr love that. It was eerie enough to see Steph Curry's first shot in the new arena from about 35 feet hit nothing but air. Is that an omen? And the Celtics are transitioning to life outside the realm of title contendership. And part of that new reality involves center Enes Kanter, who continues to deal with harassment as he remains an outspoken critic of the Turkish government and President Erdogan. He, of course, Kanter, a Turkish native. He and rookie teammate Taco Fall were confronted outside a Boston mosque, with Kanter posting this video on social media.
So, what's up, everybody? We are here at a mosque. There is Turkish people, pro-Erdogan people, are actually attacking us right here. There you go. Turkish people attacking us. I told you, America, this is crazy, right? Turkish people attacking us right there. We are getting out of the mosque on Friday, and they're attacking us.
Come on, man.
Thank you, man.
One more, Turkish people attacking us, people outside of America. We are in Boston, and Turkish people right there attacking us.
One more, Karim.
There you go.
Karim.
This guy, and that guy right there. This guy,
is it okay?
And that guy right there, America. So, I'll see you guys at FBI.
And the NBA's new measurement protocol revealed that Zion Williamson's height was fudged at Duke. Oh, what else are they fudging at Duke? He is 6'6", not 6'7", which makes his thunder dunks all the more amazing. I'm looking forward to his debut this week, and already the Pelicans are making excuses for Williamson as if not expecting his rookie season to be dominant. It's not going to be dominant. In fact, he's just going to be part of the team. He's not going to be your monster right out of the chute. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life with Chris joining the program. And Chris, I know that you loathe baseball, but can you possibly get it up for a Astros-Yankees Super Series? And if by some chance the Dodgers don't survive the Nationals, how will LA react after losing in the World Series the last 2 years?
I mean, Jay, baseball is just so long, isn't it? No, I'm kidding. Playoff baseball is different, and I have enjoyed the games thus far. Last night's game was cool to watch. The Dodgers just annihilate the ball. And although, again, that bullpen was getting a little shaky, I thought we were going to have a Dave Roberts show again. Astros-Yankees, I could definitely get behind that. I think we'll see some of the best baseball of the season. And again, we'll have amazing games. And this is great. This is why the postseason's great. But remember how the regular season used to have games like this? I know. I'm getting back to the whole loathing baseball thing. Dodgers, I think they're going to survive the Nationals. But again, I don't think that they're going to get to the World Series. So Dodger fans, I think if they'll actually react better to just losing before getting to the World Series, if they get to another World Series and lose again to either probably the Astros or the Yankees, that would actually, I think, cause more issues for Dodger fans. And I happen to be a Dodger fan, but for more people in the city of LA than if they just lose short of it, either to the Nationals or, I guess, in the NLCS.
And Chris, given the crazy logistics of getting to London in the middle of an NFL season, should the league discontinue these Euro scrums? Or is it better to, I don't know, stroke the egos of Roger Goodell and the owners and make them think that the rest of planet Earth actually cares about whether the Raiders beat the Bears?
I mean, I don't see the point of it. I've never seen the point of it, but it's not changing.
We know that they, Roger Goodell, the amount of money that comes in, I'm sure, for these games, and then also continues that narrative that the NFL is going to be a worldwide sport. And when you hear from people that, oh, in those countries, nobody cares, but then you see the crowds and you see people hyped up, it's hard to fight that narrative that, hey, this is cool. Why not do more of this? If we're making money and everyone's fine, it's going to take the teams to step up and say, you know, we're not going to travel, and it's a horrible logistic nightmare. But the owners aren't going to say that because they're getting paid.
And Chris, Snoop Dogg, pole dancers, money, guns at Kansas. As the basketball program awaits significant NCAA sanctions for its pay-for-play role in college basketball's bribery scandal. Do you like how Bill Self is trolling the NCAA? Or, I don't know, pole dancers at Fog Allen Fieldhouse? Is that maybe not a good idea with all sorts of parents sending their kids there?
Well, it's probably not a good idea. I do like that Bill Self is trolling the NCAA because he can get away with it. They're letting him do it. And because it's a blue blood like Kansas, again, these guys, these coaches, as much as they can be despicable, and a lot of them are, they're simply pushing the boundaries of what they're allowed to get away with. And that's the key. So until the NCAA really puts a stop to some of this, it doesn't matter. And if I was them, I would do whatever it takes to get the recruits, to get the best players, so that you can win titles, or at least when it comes to college basketball, at least be in the big dance and get to the Sweet 16s and the Final Fours. That way you keep the money printing and everyone's getting paid except the players. And some of them are, let's be honest. And again, it's just the machine of the NCAA. And the NCAA, until they put a stop to it, that's all that matters. And we know they're not going to, Jay.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick, or sort of quick today. I saw the demise of sports writing coming 10 years ago when I handed back a guaranteed seven figures to my myopic newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times. Then I went on HBO's Real Sports in an interview with my former boss, the late, great Frank DeFord, and said newspapers had no chance if they didn't start competing as a digital component, which the Sun-Times woefully lacks to this day. So I am not surprised that Sports Illustrated is the latest victim of thick-headed executives, in its case, Time Inc., which didn't move forward digitally as, say, the New York Times and the Washington Post have. This horrific lack of vision left newspapers and magazines vulnerable to takeovers by raiders and sharks who have no interest in saving sports journalism and don't hesitate to lay off large swaths of talented, hardworking people. The impact is staggering. A lack of investigative journalism, a lack of hard-hitting columnists to keep leagues, teams, and athletes honest amid dishonest times in this country. They don't want to pay top dollar, nor do they want to piss off the almighty multi-billion dollar sports mechanism. I was fortunate to make a fortune in 3+ decades during the last great heyday of sports media, but now unless you're a corporate puppet or a suck-up like, say, Scott Van Pelt, who does what his bosses tell him and never goes after a powerful person in his very soft commentaries, well, there's no sense, kids, in getting into this business. The romance, the thrill, the blood, the guts, it's gone. And those Nike shoes you might be wearing, maybe you don't care, but according to the New York Times, one of the rare sites doing dogged investigative work, top Nike officials, including Chief Executive Mark Parker, were briefed on medical experiments conducted to determine the effects of, yes, performance-enhancing drugs. And the head coach of a Nike training group in Oregon, Alberto Salazar, was banned for 4 years by the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency for violating anti-doping rules. So that swoosh is injected with juice. Duke continues to be one-and-done headquarters in college basketball, avoiding the FBI and the NCAA to land four more five-star prospects, the latest being forward Jamin Brakefield. All Mike Krzyzewski has to do is reach out to express interest. He did so after Brakefield visited Auburn and Louisville while awaiting a trip to Michigan, and that 6'8 forward from West Virginia said, yeah, I'm in, sure, you're Coach K. Yet, I must say this, Duke has not won a national title since 2015, and has won only one other national title since 2002. I think it's time to win another to avoid some nagging questions for Coach K. And rather than overstate the potential career of LeBron James Jr., let's show some restraint, okay? He's a freshman at Sierra Canyon School, a prep super team in the San Fernando Valley, and while his team was cruising over Rolling Hills Prep last weekend, Bronny did not score, and he committed four fouls. Teammate Zaire Wade, son of Dwayne, scored 7 points. No, I'm not going to be issuing constant Sierra Canyon updates, but yes, I do think Dwayne Wade will be joining his BFF LeBron and Anthony Davis with the Lakers after the All-Star break. I really do think that's happening.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
The watchdogs of sports are disturbingly selective and blind when it comes to racism and Native American chants and imagery. The critical mobs ran off the Chief Wahoo caricature logo in Cleveland, rightfully so, and continue to excoriate owner Dan Snyder for not changing the name of the Washington NFL franchise from Redskins to something more 21st century tone compliant. But in Atlanta, the Braves continue to use the Tomahawk Chop chant during their home games, which easily could have been eliminated as a sign of social progress when that team moved to new SunTrust Park in 2017. Cardinals reliever Ryan Heisley, a member of the Cherokee Nation, experienced the chop chant early in the National League Divisional Series and called it, quote, disrespectful, unquote, saying it, quote, devalues the perceptions of Native Americans, unquote. He's right, and while the Braves say they're taking Heisley's concerns seriously, they still carry on with the age-old song, and the fans keep swinging their foam tomahawks, ignoring the wishes of MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, who said the league has taken steps to take out the tomahawk chop. I'm quoting him. Yet he said that back in February, and as usual, Manfred is too soft and wishy-washy to act right now, and he doesn't want to create a controversy in Georgia, where the Braves, moved from the racially mixed inner city of Atlanta to an almost exclusively white business park in Cobb County. And it's just not the Braves. The Kansas City Chiefs have the same chant and ceremony at Arrowhead Stadium. We have been discussing this issue for years, but only in Cleveland have those words not simply evaporated amid the odors of tradition and big money. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never ever let anybody mute you.
Waiting on the pistle, the dizzle, and the shizzle. G's to the biz act. Now, ladies, here we kiss her. When the pimp's in the crib, ma, drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. When the pigs try to get at you, park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. And if a nigga get an attitude, pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. I got the rollie on my arm, and I'm pouring Chandon, and I'm over best weed, cause I got it going on. I'm a bad boy with a lot of hoes. Drive my own cars and wear my own clothes. I hang out tough, I'm a real boss. Big Snoop Dogg, yeah, he's so sharp. On the TV screen and in the magazines. If you play me close, you want a red beam. Oh, you got a gun, so you wanna pop back? AK-47, now nigga, stop that. Cement shoes, now I'm on the move. Your family's crying, now you on the news. They can't find you, and now they miss you. Must I remind you, I'm only here to twist you. Pistol whip you, dip you, then flip you, then dance.